¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two forts of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
Thank you to Quince for sponsoring this episode.
What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening.
Mae Scott is a multi-crime survivor and author. Her story of survivorship begins at the age of 14 when she met the man she would eventually marry. And although their relationship would end violently and her ex-husband would face a potential life sentence for the harm he forced upon Mae, her legal battle didn't end there. After navigating the criminal justice processes as well as a treacherous family and divorce court journey, Mae now uses her experiences to bring awareness to others. The Broken Cycle Media team is deeply grateful for Mae's time, advocacy, and incredibly powerful perspectives.
Summer of 2020, we went on an adults-only trip to Arizona with some of our closest friends, as 2020 had been very stressful. When we got home from that trip, I wrote him an email. He read the email and he asked if we could talk. He sat there and he cried and he said how everything I put in that email was correct. He was going to change and he was going to be better. At this point, I said that I was done. I didn't want to waste any more of my time on him or our relationship, because I felt like it had just already robbed me of so many good years and potential happy moments. I told him that I would not participate in couples therapy with him. He found a counselor. He made us an appointment. He begged. He cried. And I caved, and we started going to couples counseling. I remember our very first session with this counselor, we went in person and wore masks because it was COVID. I was very honest with her when we got there. I said, I have 1 foot out the door, if not both feet out the door. I really am here to go through the motions. She validated that and said a lot of the couples that she saw seek counseling when somebody is ready to go. That first session was a lot of just basic information gathering and intake, what's been going on. And the details are fuzzy, but I will tell you that we left that session. We were standing together in the parking lot. I was hysterically crying, apologizing to him for all of the ways that I had hurt him. I was explaining now how this was all my fault, that we had gotten to this point. When I think back on that, I am both shocked and not, because that is what narcissistic, manipulative, controlling, abusive people do, is they flip that script, they make themselves the victim, and it worked. It was an instant turn, and suddenly I was groveling at his feet, begging him to work on our marriage and to not throw things away. Our counselor encouraged both of us to get individual counseling in addition to the couples counseling. I have always been a big advocate for therapy. I sought out my own individual counselor. My ex said he was not going to get individual counseling. Our couples counselor felt like that was going to potentially be a problem. So to kind of balance that, when we first started working with her, she saw us individually and then as a couple, and then individually and as a couple. And I believe we did that two or three rounds before then we just did couples counseling with her. I loved getting individual counseling. I was very glad to have somebody else to talk things through and to process things with and to get another perspective as well. So that was very helpful for me. Couples counseling, it was very eye-opening. Our couples counselor was giving us assignments that mostly were related to reading different books. There were some that she wanted us to read together and come back and discuss. And then she could see some of the things going on individually with each of us. And she was encouraging us to read these individual books as well and to discuss them. The first book that she suggested that I read was Codependent No More by Melody Beattie. I read that and was shocked. I remember sitting with that book and crying a lot. I didn't realize that I was completely codependent in my marriage. So when I read Codependent No More, that was life-changing. She also suggested that I read Girl, Wash Your Face, Girl, Stop Apologizing. I read Untamed by Glennon Doyle. I started to really dive into these self-help, finding my strength, finding my voice books that were very empowering. He maybe listened to one book on audio that she suggested. And when I asked if we could discuss it, like our therapist suggested, he told me he didn't want to spend his free time discussing that. Marriage therapy became checking a box. We would both show up. I would try to express my feelings. I finally felt like in marriage therapy, I could safely express these things, that I was not happy, that there was this huge power imbalance. Calling things out that, hey, you said you were going to do all these things and you haven't, and you have no plan to. You're not showing up for me or the kids in the way that we need you to. And he would sit in therapy and say things like, I'm too old to change. I am who I am. You knew who I was when you married me. He started to really let his mask slip in couples counseling, where he started to get very angry and yell. I would sit there and cry. The counselor would point that out and say, look at your wife right now. You are spewing at us. And she is over here shaking, scared, trying to communicate with you. And you won't even look at her. You won't hear her. It was about a year after we started couples counseling that the counselor told us, this is not couples counseling. Until you get some individual help for yourself, to my ex, she said, I can't help you. I can't do anything with what I'm given here. And so she basically fired us. She let us go. I decided to find a male marriage counselor this time. I thought maybe my ex would feel more seen and heard by a male provider. So we had a virtual couples session with this male provider. He said, I'd like to meet with you each individually, and then we can make a plan to move forward. And we said, okay. So my ex met with him first, and then maybe the next week I met with him. That was also a life-changing appointment for me. We hopped on. It was a virtual meeting. He looked at me and he said, your husband is going to kill you. He said, I will not work with him, and he needs to get himself very serious help. You need to get yourself and your kids out. He said he had seen people like my ex before. He would be willing to work with me individually if I needed help and support. I still had my individual counselor, so I respectfully declined. And I told him the writing has been on the wall for a long time. The kids and I are going to leave. My ex's family is going to help us. And he said, no, they're not. And I said, they are. They know what's going on. They've been helping me. They're my first call every time he escalates and gets violent. They come over. They help diffuse situations. They love me and the kids. I've known them since I was 14 years old. He said, they are going to turn on you. I said, absolutely not. They're going to turn on him. They are going to stand by us. They are going to support us. He was very respectful and kind and said, best of luck to you. And he was 1,000,000% right. He saw everything from an outsider perspective. And that was exactly what happened. I did tell my individual therapist what this marriage counselor said. And she instructed me to pull out my phone. And she said, we are going to have a very specific safety plan for you and the kids.
Hi, friends. I'm back talking about Quince again, not only because they've been kind enough to sponsor this episode, but also because I have fallen deeply in love with the fact that they're helping our listeners build a timeless wardrobe that was made to last. 100% organic cotton sweaters, premium denim made with stretch for all-day comfort, luxe cotton cashmere blends perfect for the colder seasons. They literally have everything you need for a wardrobe that actually makes it from season to season with you. My personal favorite items in my closet that get an obscene amount of use are my stretch tee, linen pants, and cashmere top. Without them, I would not have made it through winter. And now you can refresh your wardrobe for the new year with Quince. Go to quince.com/WCN for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/WCN to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/WCN. Thank you again to Quince for sponsoring this episode.
Up until that point, the kids and I had a very loose safety plan. They had witnessed and heard enough, and our plan was for the kids to go down to our neighbor's house. They had the garage code if needed. Our neighbor, it was a very good friend of mine, knew that things weren't great, but nobody knew how bad they were. The safety plan was really just for the kids to go down and to call my in-laws, and I would figure things out for myself. My individual counselor said that doesn't cut it anymore. So we came up with a bit of a stronger safety plan. One was to get me a Google Voice number because my ex was monitoring my phone. All of my text messages went to his iMac, and I really had no ability to communicate that he didn't see. So did the Google Voice number, made up a safe word with my mom. That way, if my mom called and I told her I was busy, that meant that things weren't okay and that she had to call my ex-in-laws. I found a different male counselor for us. And it was in our very first session with this therapist. We're giving a little bit, again, information. And the therapist looked at my ex And he said, "Do you know what a bully you are?" That didn't land well, as you maybe can imagine. At this point, the mask was off. I mean, even around family and friends, he was really struggling to keep his act up. I had no idea how counseling was going to make me so much more vulnerable with him and escalate his behavior in such a way. Things got so much more violent and scary after we started marriage counseling. And I attribute that to a few things. One was that I was wising up. I was learning a lot, not just about myself, but about relationships and personality disorders and what a healthy marriage looks like. When he felt like he was losing control, things got very scary. While there were these really big events that happened that led to the criminal charges, the daily transgressions, our house was the most tense environment. You could feel it when you walked in. When I used to pick the older kids up from school, almost the first question every day they would ask is Dad at home? And if he was, their shoulders kind of stayed up. And if he wasn't, it was a deep breath, a sigh of relief. They knew they could just kind of go in and be kids. So there's so many little things that are not necessarily against the law or something that an officer can charge a person with a crime. I cannot tell you how many times he dragged our kids out of bed, sat them down on the couch, and told them, "I'm a whore. I don't love them. I'm destroying our family. I don't want to be their mom anymore." All of these things that they could not charge him with anything. Even though he did ultimately get charged with child abuse for something different, there just was so much of our daily lives that were hell that nobody could really do anything about. And that was scary too. For our criminal trial, there were three main nights that the charges stemmed from. We went out with friends for our friend's birthday. All of the husbands had gone out earlier in the day to a local beer festival. And then all of the wives were meeting the husbands at the bar for dinner, and they have bowling and they have a band there. It's a fun place. It's very big and loud and popular. From the moment my ex walked in that night, I knew something was wrong. I asked him. He said nothing. Whatever, no big deal. My friends noticed. They said, "What's wrong with him?" I said, "I don't know." We were bowling, and again, it was our friend's birthday. So I leaned over to her husband to say, "Should we ask the waitress, can you bring a dessert or something with a candle?" And after that 2-second conversation, I went over to my ex. He started yelling at me for flirting with our friend. I was not flirting, but that was how he saw it. And I said, "I'm not doing this. I'm leaving." And I left with nothing. So I walked back. He had my bag and it had my phone in it. And he told our friends, "We're leaving." So we left. And what that looked like was fighting for hours in this back alleyway behind the businesses. He took my phone. He took my watch because I had an Apple Watch. He dragged me through the dirty water of the back alleyway. When I tried to run away, he threw me up against the fence and put his forearm on my throat. And I picked up some dirt and I threw it at him. I was trying to get him off. He took that dirt and he shoved it in my mouth. He put it in my eyes. He put it in my hair. It was the most horrific night of my life. And that isn't even the night that he was arrested. He was threatening to call the local mental health networks to get me committed. He was yelling at me that I was crazy. And he finally agreed that we could go home. We called an Uber because we had all carpooled with friends. And he told me that I had to have sex with him in the Uber. I remember thinking, Uber is not going to allow that to happen. And We need this cool off time to get home, de-escalate, and it will be fine. And that is not what happened. He tried to force himself on me in the Uber. Then we got home and things escalated. Our kids were asleep and our daughter was a teenager at that point. So the babysitter was my mom and she had gone home because the kids were asleep. My daughter had said, I'm good. My brothers are sleeping. No biggie. We get home and he was out of control. He raped me on our couch. He shoved himself in my mouth. He tried to shove himself in my anus. He stripped me naked and was grabbing my hair and dragging me around. I ran out the back door of our house completely naked. I jumped the fence into the neighbor's yard. At this point, it was maybe 1 a.m. I was trying to decide if I should go knock on a neighbor's door. And all I could think was that the kids were still in the house with him. And I didn't know what he was capable of. So I went back home. He dragged me upstairs. We had a walk-in closet. And it was oddly insulated. And he said we were going in there to talk so that the kids didn't hear. And so we wouldn't wake them up. I thought that sounded like a good idea. And so I went into the closet with him where he proceeded to beat me for the next 2 hours. I made the mistake of telling him where I was already sore and hurt from what he had done in the back alley. And he would just hit those same spots and say, is this where it hurts? What's going to hurt more now? And I still to this day have a bruise. It's like a scar on my upper thigh from the hours where he sat there and hit me. The bruise was kind of in the shape of his hand. He had me pinned down on the ground. So when he finally let me up, when I tried to leave, he grabbed me around the throat and lifted me up off the ground and choked me. And I lost some bladder control. My vision went black. And then he dropped me on the ground. He told me to stay in the closet and think about what I had done. I fell asleep because at this point, it's like after 3 a.m. He came back in the closet a little while later and was screaming at me for falling asleep. I needed to think about what I did and how I acted. And I really am not sure what happened, but he told me to get in the bed and we went to sleep. And the next morning, when we woke up, my whole body was so sore. I had bruises, not on my face, because that would have been too obvious for him. And he rolled over and he said, I am so sorry. He put his hands, palms up. He said, these hands are not for hurting you. And I won't do that again as long as you stop flirting with people. It very much was, I'm sorry, but this is your fault. This never would have happened had you not done what you did. Our friends were extremely worried. They had seen his presentation at the bar. They had been trying to contact me all night and no contact because he had my phone and my watch. So they asked me that next day to FaceTime them because they said they wanted to see me. And I made up a story. I FaceTimed them and I told them I just had had way too much to drink. We took an Uber home and I passed out. I didn't tell them what happened. I was in such a state of shock and trauma that next day. I reached out to the Colorado Crisis Line via text. I told them that there had been a very violent altercation and that I didn't know what to do, that I was embarrassed, that I was scared. They offered support and resources, and I already had a counseling session scheduled the next day, actually. So we left it at that. I said, he's coming. I have to go. And that was that. I told him I wanted to talk about what happened in marriage counseling. And he told me I couldn't. He also told me I couldn't talk about it in my own counseling, which I didn't go into as great of detail in my own counseling as I wanted to. I just kind of said we got in a fight and that things weren't good. But nobody knew what happened that night until I told the district attorney in December of 2023, and they were able to press charges because I took pictures of all of the bruises and injuries, and I had the transcript from the Colorado Crisis Line. So that was August of 2021, but really nothing changed because it didn't have to. Our relationship worked for him. I was terrified for so many reasons, not only for my and my kids' physical safety, but he was an attorney. His dad was an attorney. His brothers were attorneys. I was a stay-at-home mom, and I just knew that if I tried to leave, I wouldn't be able to. They would annihilate me in court. I had no money, no resources. They had everything. So things just kind of maintained. And I remember thinking, I guess when the youngest is 18, then I'll finally be able to leave. A big part of me said, they know, they've seen it, they heard it, they'll help me. And then this other side saying, that's their son, that's their family, that's their blood. They're going to help him. They're not going to help me.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two fourths of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
Things weren't great, but they were okay from August of 2021. And then December 31st of 2021, going into the new year, my ex and our two older kids tested positive for COVID. So of course, everybody was bummed. They didn't get to do what they wanted to on New Year's Eve. We all joke about man cold or maybe men who are dramatic when they're sick. He was dramatic and he was very angry that he had COVID. He told me he needed to have sex. And so I put a mask on and I faced away from him. And we had sex when he had just tested positive for COVID. Myself and our youngest had not tested positive yet. We still felt okay. We tried to carry on the best we could for New Year's Eve. I put the youngest to bed, and around midnight, myself, my ex, and our two older kids were all downstairs watching the ball drop. And the oldest said something snarky to her brother, kind of typical age-appropriate comment about, I can't believe mom let you stay up so late or something. My ex just laid into her. You are so disrespectful. You can't treat your brother like that. That's not your place. You're not his parent. She was upset and she ran up to her room. I went up to see if she was okay. And in the back of my mind, I thought, he's not going to follow me in there because that's her bedroom, her space. This is a way for me to also stay safe right now from all of his venom and his anger. And I was wrong. He followed me in there. I started to call his mom. He wrestled me for the phone, threw me down on the floor. He was hitting me and trying to get the phone out of my hands. And our daughter got on his back and was yelling at him to get off me. He threw her off him and she hit her head and she blacked out. And that's where the child abuse charge ended up coming from. My ex had taken my phone, my watch, my daughter's phone. We didn't have a house phone. So he sat all of us down in my daughter's room and talked to us about how none of us respect him. We don't treat him well and how I am not a good parent because I don't make the kids respect him. He said he was going to leave the house, leave us. And he told the kids, if you don't want me to leave, you need to get down on your hands and knees and beg me not to go. And that's what they did. It was the most repulsive, heartbreaking thing to ever experience. Eventually, he runs out of steam, kind of sent everybody to bed. And he and I stayed up almost the entire night with me telling him how I would be better, the things that I would do to change, how I would help the kids be more respectful to him. Again, me taking all of the onus and responsibility for what happened that night. Then things just kind of chugged along the way they were. Change is scary, and I was scared for our safety. Months later, I think it was August of 2022, I sat down with my ex-mother-in-law, and she said to me, "I know things are really bad, but I need you to tell me what's really going on." And I said to her, "I will never tell you the things that he has done." I said, "I am a parent. I have sons. You will never look at him again if you know what he has done." She said she still thought that she wanted to know. And she said, "I know that you're in an abusive marriage. We are going to help you and the kids get out." About 2 months later, we had a marriage counseling session and it didn't go great. My ex said, "That's it. We're getting a divorce. This is what you've wanted anyway. I'm going to go, but just so you know, I'm taking everything. I'm taking the kids. I'm taking the house." We had no savings, no money, no assets. But whatever we had, he was taking. He looked at me and he said to me, "Enjoy all of the dirty dick you're going to have to suck to pay your bills. And just so you know, you're never going to see your children again." He picked up his gun and he left. I didn't know what that meant. I called his parents. I called my parents. I called the school. I called my counselor. His parents were able to call him and talk him down. I sent our daughter a text message. I said, "If dad comes to your school, he is angry. Do not go with him." He came back a few minutes later. I don't know. He ran out of steam or something again. And it was like everything was fine. And then it was just a couple weeks later, he was arrested. We went to a wedding for one of his friends that I had never even met before. But there was another couple there that I did know. And we all got a little cabin. The wedding was only about 45 minutes away, but we used it as an excuse for a kid-free overnight. While we were at the wedding, there was a younger gentleman. I don't know this person. He was pretty intoxicated, and he kept trying to dance with me. My ex saw that and was livid that this younger gentleman was trying to dance with me. And we finally got back to our little cabin. Our friends were in the loft upstairs. We were downstairs in the bedroom, and my ex wanted to have sex. And at this point, it was maybe 1 a.m. I said I was too tired. I didn't want to. And he started hitting me in this kind of light tapping fashion on my cheeks and on my butt, saying, "You know, get up, come on, we got to have sex." I told him something along the lines of, "Look, you can do what you want, but I'm going to sleep." That was a big pattern in our marriage, the objectification. He didn't care ever how I was feeling physically, mentally, it didn't matter. And we had been drinking. It was an open bar at a wedding. He was really upset and he took the car and he left. So I reached out to his parents and I said, "I don't know where he's going or what he's doing, but please keep the kids safe," because they were babysitting. And they said, "We will." Then he came back. He was so angry. And he took my phone. He was hitting me. He was sticking his fingers everywhere that you can imagine, including down my throat. I had cuts all along the roof of my mouth in these like perfect lines with crescent shapes at the end, all the way back into my throat. He was sticking his fingers inside my anus. He was dragging me all around the room. He was hitting me, and I just played possum because I didn't know what else to do. And his friends heard things escalating, and they asked if everything was okay. And I was like, "Yep, this is just him being himself. We're fine." He stuck his fingers up my nose and pulled me into a sitting position and smashed his hand on my face, and my nose just started bleeding. I open my eyes and I see my blood. And for all of the horrible things he had done over the years, he had never actually made me bleed. And there was something about seeing my blood. And he had already taken my phone, but he forgot to take my watch. Part of my safety plan with my therapist, I had practiced hitting that SOS button on my watch, and I called and it connected immediately. I had enough time to tell them there was a domestic disturbance and this was the location. But when he realized what I was doing, my phone was in his pocket and he left, and my Apple Watch was not a standalone device. So as soon as he got 30 feet away, the call disconnected. They reverse 911 called and he answered the phone. His friends heard the altercation. They saw him leave. They saw me come out of the bedroom and there was blood from my nose. So we had some eyewitnesses the night that he was arrested. And that was the third night where the charges came from. He was charged ultimately with 5 felonies and 4 misdemeanors. I ended up going to the hospital and having forensic exams. Since I didn't have my phone at the hospital, I used the hospital phone to call my parents. They came to the hospital to pick me up. My ex's parents were at our house with our kids. When I got home, the kids were already awake. I hadn't slept now in more than 24 hours, and I'm sure that I looked as such. The older kids asked me immediately what was wrong. My middle son actually noticed that there was still dried blood around my nose. I hadn't realized that. I just said, oh, you know, I'm fine. It was just a bloody nose. So I'm standing there with my parents and my in-laws. My mother-in-law said to me something like, you have some very big decisions coming up. And I just was in such shock. And I remember crying to her and apologizing. I really had no idea that he would be arrested. But in that moment, I just was scared and I just wanted him to stop. I wasn't thinking about, okay, now he's going to be arrested. We were scheduled to leave for Mexico with his entire family a few days after that. I still thought we were all going to go on that trip. I didn't want to tell anybody what happened. I didn't want to tell my parents, his parents, any of our friends. I really just wanted this all to blow over and things to go back to the way they were. That day, I did everything that I always do as a parent. I drove my kids to all of their activities. I helped with carpool. I made them breakfast, lunch, and dinner, all on zero sleep. I brought my kids over to one of my best friend's houses. I stayed there while the kids played, and I didn't tell her what happened. I just was in shock and confused, and I didn't know what was going to happen.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
I was very unprepared for family court. When you file for divorce, there is an immediate injunction that says basically the status quo remains. Until things can get figured out, nobody can cancel any insurance of anybody's. Whoever was paying the mortgage has to pay the mortgage. Everything stays the same. My ex, I filed for divorce. Since then, he has never paid a bill. He has never provided anything for his children. He has never shared an expense. And not only that, I was court ordered to pay my attorney, husband, spousal support while I was supporting his 3 kids.
Thank you again to Quince for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/WCN for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/WCN.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two fourths of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.